Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly, looking back on a weekend of glorious gobsmacking action. And away from Silvio Berlusconi, in football there were big names tumbling too, as Villa move into fourth place in the Premier League and Arsenal move back in the title picture thanks to that screamer from Arsene Wenger. With all that plus the latest from abroad, Spain, where Mallorca take on their most dangerous opponent, sit low. Italy, where it's no way Jose as Moody Moo throws a special strop. And the Bundesliga, with Jens Lehmann sent off for Stuttgart. The pod asks, we've seen him wee in public, so what does his number two look like? All that plus your post and a special preview of the midweek games in the Premier League in Football Weekly. Number two, you see, yes. Barry?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Barry Glendenning, welcome on board.
Hello.
Hello there. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Delighted you could join us today.
Delighted to be joining you today.
Right, is this your final appearance of the year, do you know?
Don't know.
Oh, I bet it'll be a special one either way. And John Ashdown.
Hello.
Hi, John. Have you had a good weekend?
Had a great weekend. Didn't see a lot of football, unfortunately.
No?
I was too busy at Ultimate Power, the club night where they play nothing but power ballads for hours.
Of course, right.
They played Meatloaf, they played The Leopard. It was great.
Okay.
Is your thumb sore from holding up the
My throat's
lighter?
Throat's a little bit raw, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, probably a bit more husky than usual today.
Right, a little bit red in the pink in the eye as well.
Yeah, I was feeling it yesterday.
I can imagine you were. Whilst in no way do I wish to delay our getting onto the big footballing issues, I do have to ask, Ultimate Power is what?
It's a travelling club night based in London who specialise in playing nothing but power ballads. So it's sort of a bit of an 80s night where they throw some different stuff in.
If the high point of most club nights is when they play the power ballad, when you have a whole night of nothing but power ballads, what then was the real climax?
Well, for me, because I'm a bit of a Meatloaf fan, Anything for Love was the whole thing, sort of 8 minutes. That's the other thing with the power ballad, like, because right. Each song is obviously sort of 8 minutes long, that you end up only having sort of five or six songs an hour.
Right.
Yeah, you can really get into it. It's great.
Curious fact about Meatloaf, for 10 years he was actually a vegetarian.
What club nights are you attending that the power ballad section is the highlight, by the way?
That was a bit of whimsy. Well, listen, I was going to start actually with Arsenal and this stirring comeback they produced at Anfield. And a 2-1 victory then over Liverpool, who, to be fair, possibly should have had a penalty back in the first half. But still, a remarkable performance from the Gunners. Now, normally after the start they'd had, they would be out of the title picture, but not this season. Is it fair to now consider them back among the title candidates?
Yes,
the Gunners.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, they're 6 points behind with the game in hand, so they're obviously right back in it. And every weekend we seem to be writing somebody off as title contenders, and only for the teams ahead of them to stumble, as happened this weekend. But the Liverpool-Arsenal game was strange. Like, first half was all Liverpool, second half was all Arsenal. If only there were some handy phrase we had to describe such a game where one half is completely different to the other. But there isn't. Arsenal's turnaround has been put down to Arsene Wenger basically losing the plot at half-time and screaming at his players and telling them that they weren't fit to wear the Arsenal shirt. And after their first half performance, which was pretty poor, he had every right to do that. And, God, Liverpool's players were very poor in the second half, didn't even muster a shot on goal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what this week's excuse is, because it's usually finances and debt, but it seems to be low confidence. Maybe if you tell players that they're very bad because you would like to pay for bigger, better players, then they get low on confidence. I don't know. There might be some connection. I don't know. I mean, I really feel that Liverpool threw this game away. I'm not sure Arsenal were actually that improved. I mean, Arshavin had a nightmare of a match, but then, of course, scored the mother of all wonderful goals. I really rated Arsenal before the start of the season. I'm still not convinced that that win will necessarily change much of the dynamic. I can't see Andre Arshavin holding the line on a Tuesday night in Birmingham or, you know, some other windswept place and really get these results that you need for the title. It's all fair and well beating a big side, but you need to win these other games, which they haven't been winning in recent weeks.
Interesting. Lisbon Exile, quick tweet, says, any thoughts on Walcott, Theo Walcott? He continues to baffle me. He doesn't seem to be making the progress of other players like Lennon and Young.
Well, he's always injured. It's difficult to make progress when you're not playing, especially at that age. You need games, and he's just been very unlucky, very frail. The problem for Arsenal is that I have a lot of these players, and that's why they tend to struggle.
Well, speaking of not playing, Alberto Aquilani, presumably the plan there is just to wait a bit and then sell him back for a bit less than they bought him for, is it? Midweek, Arsenal are at Burnley. Kind of game that they have to win, Raphael Honigstein. Burnley with a terrific home record.
Yeah, I think it'll be, in a strange way, perhaps more accurate reflection of their true potential for winning the championship, that game at Burnley, because you could easily see it finishing at 1-1 or 0-0, and then we have to write them off again come Thursday. So I think it's not the easiest of assignments. Obviously, their confidence would be very high, and Arsenal are a confident side. I think Wenger himself is the first one to acknowledge that they go through these spells where everything seems to go for them because they have all these technical players who strive on confidence. But I'm not quite sure it would be enough. So I still think it's Chelsea's title to throw away.
Liverpool, meanwhile, are close to the bottom of the table as they are to the top, and they are hosting Wigan, which you would think should offer some solace to them in this troubled time.
Just Liverpool have to be really careful not to give away a free kick from about 60 yards against Wigan.
That man Figueroa. Do you want to eulogise him briefly before we move
well,
on?
Well, yeah, I saw that game as well. I forgot about it, and I'm amazed I forgot about it, because that was a sensational
goal. Stoke 2, Wigan 2.
Yeah. Wigan got a free kick just inside their own half, and Figueroa spotted Sorensen off his line and sort of took a shot from inside his own half, which ended up going in over Sorensen's despairing backpedalling and in the top right-hand corner. It was a fantastic goal.
It was a very flat strike as well as the speed that he hit it. He's an excellent player, actually. I mean, Wigan fans will be delighted that, obviously, with the goal, but he sort of put his head above the parapet a little bit. I think regular Wigan watchers will have seen him, and whenever I've seen Wigan play, that he's been excellent. And he's sort of the latest in the line of sort of South American talent that they've brought in, sort of unheralded.
What kind of player is he exactly?
He's a left back, and he's not particularly. Well, apart from obviously on Saturday, you wouldn't really consider him as being a particular flair player. Mm. He's just very, very, very solid. You know, one of these players who you just don't think. You know, you probably don't notice he's sort of 7 out of 8 out of 10 every game. Which from fullbacks is sort of what you need. You need reliability, particularly playing in a defence like Wigan's.
Absolutely. Now, mention Arsenal getting back into the title picture, and of course they raided in that by the surprises at Old Trafford, and to an extent Everton's draw at Chelsea, which there's been a lot said about the Chelsea's weakness on set pieces, etc. Was it just a case of Everton getting a little bit lucky, do you think, this game?
Well, I did hear you say this morning that you disagree with people who are...
You know you're in trouble when you're borrowing opinions from me, Barry.
Well, yeah, I only saw fleeting highlights of this game, so I'd have to take your word for it.
Well, I'm sure... well, I'm not sure of anything, but it doesn't seem that dramatic a result compared, say, to Man United losing at home to Aston Villa, a team who we correctly pointed out last week always roll over at Old Trafford.
Yes, and we're proved right once again. I think Villa were, and Villa fans would be very annoyed if I say that they were lucky, but I do think they were lucky to win that game. Manchester United did sort of...
It was a well-worked goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And Manchester United sort of battered them from then on in, and the referee obviously didn't give them the amount of extra time or
all the penalty
they deserved.
Stonewall penalty for Rooney.
Yeah. Poor old Rooney with the legs hacked out from underneath him, and he didn't get his penalty. There wasn't the mandatory amount of injury time played, as Ferguson has been complaining again. Match officials don't seem to be able to get it into their heads that the amount you have to play, you must keep playing until Manchester United score. Those are the rules.
Aston Villa have now beaten Chelsea, Liverpool and Man United. Do they thus make better candidates for the potentially vacant top four slot than Man City, Spurs or any of the other pretenders?
I definitely think they're, of those three sides, they're the best. Manchester
Why?
But they're just a better team. They've got, in central defence, they've got Richard Dunn and, what's
Collins?
His face? James Collins from West Ham. who are vastly superior to Manchester City's centre halves.
Ironically, because that's
yes, because Manchester City got rid of Richard Dunn to facilitate Joleon Le Scott, who's having a shocker this season.
I think the problem for Villas, and even having seen the game against United, what I thought they were quite impressive is they're a very, very direct side, and it works well against the bigger teams. By that I mean the teams who like to attack and give you the space to isolate your centre-backs. But against the more defensive sides, the Wolves, Burnley, they only drew, West Ham, Blackburn, Wigan, they've lost against. I'm not quite sure they have got the right setup to grind out these results that you will need for fourth spot. So while I would agree that on paper they're perhaps the best side of all these, you know, top four contenders that we talk about, I still, from their style of play, would think that City have a bigger chance despite all their terrible draws this season.
And Villa's sort of plan B when things aren't going to plan in those tight games is to give the ball to Ashley Young and hope that he comes up with something, which isn't, you know, if you're relying on one player like that. Although Martin O'Neill gets very upset if you suggest that they're over-reliant on anybody. You know, it's not the most sort of solid foundation for those tight games.
But they're up in fourth.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sort of having a go.
No,
I should probably add as well, it was a heroic rearguard action on their part. That wasn't just luck alone that got them the 3 points.
Too late, Barry.
I foresee extreme messy. Yeah. That's me bolting the stable door, or locking the stable door after the horse has galloped over the horizon.
Villa are hosting Sunderland. It's one of the games they should be winning if they've got serious pretensions, Rafael, yeah. While Man United host Wolves. Can Wolves spring another surprise? They've won two straight games now. They moved out of the bottom three this weekend with that extraordinary victory there at White Hart Lane.
Was it extraordinary?
Well, I would say it was quite surprising. Spurs at home to Wolves, 1-0 to Wolves.
You wouldn't have had that on your accumulator, would you, over the weekend?
Oh, don't get me started on my weekend accumulator.
All right, we won't. But what about Wolves at Man United? No.
Well, it's an interesting week in that all the sort of leading sides have games, apart from the sort of Tottenham Man City game,
yeah,
that they should, you know, they should win. And so it could be every weekend sort of obviously the most important weekend of the season ever. But it's sort of perhaps it's a men from the boys type of week where if say Villa go to Sunderland and only get a point, I think it does say something if Man United win and Liverpool win and Arsenal win.
Thanks, John.
Any of those
right
combinations therein.
Brilliant.
I think Villa be perfectly happy with a point away to Sunderland.
Yeah, but they don't necessarily need a, you know, that sort of result. They need something. If I think you really, really have to win games, I think getting useful points are enough for your UEFA Cup hopes. But yeah, 3 points are the big ones.
All right. Well, there'll be more of this laser sharp analysis in part part three when we look around. And we look forward to the rest of the midweek round, because in a second or two we go continental with Sidlow in Spain and Rafael Hoddingstein on the Bundesliga, and who knows, maybe even a spot on Serie A as well.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
All right, Football Weekly, Dr. Sid will see you now. Sid, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks for asking.
You don't need to see the doctor then, do you?
Yeah, but yet well. We do, Sid, because your areas of expertise are many. And of course, we want to tap into your reaction to another big weekend in the Liga, Barcelona winning the derby over Espanyol, and the supposedly Ronaldo-dependent Real Madrid winning without Ronaldo.
Yeah, and not just without Ronaldo, without Kaká as well. Oh. And they showed signs, Real Madrid, of the kind of qualities that they've shown over the last couple of years. And that's the slightly uncomfortable thing, I think, for Real Madrid. They showed sort of non-galactic qualities that, you know, when it's about fight, when it's about spirit, they still have that. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of pace in the team. There's a lot of competitiveness in the side. And I thought they played very well against Valencia. Bear in mind that they won 3-2, and both of Valencia's goals, while Valencia had a brilliant first 20 minutes or so, both of Valencia's goals came from pretty bad mistakes from Iker Casillas. So I think Madrid will be really, really pleased with that result. And they're talking about the fact in the Madrid press now that the last four times Real Madrid won the league, they had also won at Mestalla.
But can they do without Pepe?
I actually think that's a really, really big question. I think that Pepe disguises the fact that there's one or two people in the defence who are not that good defensively. Now, Arbeloa has certainly helped with him playing at left-back rather than Marcelo. I still think Sergio Ramos is occasionally problematic at right-back. And one of the amazing things about Pepe as a defender isn't so much just that he defends well, as that he releases his other teammates from their bad mistakes. Very, very quick at coming across, very quick at covering people. Now, Pepe does tend to run at one mad moment a game, but it's normally worth it for his ability to cover around the back of other players. And I think they'll really, really miss him. It looks like he's going to be out for pretty much the entire season and might just make it back to the World Cup.
Wow. Cruciate knack is the issue there. You as a doctor will understand that terminology. Barcelona mentioned their victory. Dubious penalty there. They've flown off to Abu Dhabi now for the World Club Championship. Meanwhile, in other news, because, for example, Equalex were saying, why has the Spanish segment become the Cristiano Ronaldo hour? City used to talk about the smaller teams. Please go back to that. So, Jermaine Pennant to Real Zaragoza. What's going on, Sid?
Well, Jermaine Pennant's coach has just been sacked, and it's quite entertaining, this. He was sacked at the weekend after being beaten 2-1 by Athletic Bilbao, but it wasn't because he was beaten 2-1 by Athletic Bilbao. How about this for a pre-match press conference? In the pre-match press conference, Marcelino, who's the Zaragoza coach, Jermaine Pennant's coach, came out and said, I already feel sentenced. I already feel like a sacked man. The club don't trust in me. If I have been convicted and sentenced but not yet executed, it's only because the players are behind me and because the fans haven't yet sung and called for my head. Well, on Saturday night, they lost. The fans didn't call for his head because they're blaming the club, but the club sacked him anyway on Saturday night. And this is a real problem because they put in place a guy called José Aurelio Gay, who's only going to be in charge for a game, or maybe not even a game, while they look for another coach. By the time they get that other coach, who, by the way, could be Bernd Schuster, which would be sensationally good fun, if that happens, while they look for another coach, so let's say it's Schuster, by the end of next week, it would mean that in 18 first division months, Real Zaragoza would have had 7 different coaches. And I think that is kind of the problem, that Marcelino, the coach, has clearly made a lot of very big mistakes, and the results have been dreadfully bad and worse, really, than they should have been. But Zaragoza as a club are a club with a real problem. There's a lack of clarity about the way they do things, and they're somewhat adrift at the moment. They don't seem to have a sense of identity. And I think one of the things that best sums it up is a statement on their website last night. Now, bear in mind, this is a football club that, in theory at least, football clubs, you know, act with decorum, and they're very polite and they're very gentlemanly after a sacking. Last night, statement on the front of the Real Zaragoza website: Marcelino leaves the team in the relegation zone, departs having won only 3 games, departs having been knocked out of the Copa del Rey, and that is the sad baggage of what he's left behind. So no thanks for your efforts. No, it's a terrible, painful, mutual decision that we've had to take. No, you know, we really appreciate your hard work. It's more like dancing on his grave.
Right. Real Zaragoza sound like they're a bit rubbish, Sid, would you say?
They do, don't they? Yes.
Yeah, careful though, hey? You're already in trouble, aren't you, Sid, for besmirching the good name of Spanish clubs with this word rubbish?
Well, it would appear so. This is one that I need to handle over the next couple of days. I've actually sent a letter already to Real Mallorca, that's the club you're talking about, and tried to get in touch with the head of the Federation of Supporters Clubs for Real Mallorca so that I can explain the words that they're so unhappy about.
Well, what are they unhappy about, Sid? Tell us the story from the start.
It's ever so slightly vague, which is one of the reasons why I've contacted them to say, look, if there's a specific complaint, tell me, and I'm more than happy to respond to it, because, of course, to be responsible for what I've written. Right, last week, essentially, I wrote a column about Mallorca and about the fantastic work that they are doing as a team. I was going to say a club then, but as a team, because I think we can debate who actually represents the club. But as a team, to the players, and in particular, manager Gregorio Manzano, I think, has done a phenomenally good job. And the point I made was that he's done a brilliant job in very, very difficult circumstances. Mallorca have been the subject of 3 or 4 failed takeovers over the last 6 months. They were taken over by a president earlier this year, which turned out not to be their new president and owner, because he hadn't actually put forward the money that was there. Players have gone unpaid. The best players have departed. And the line I used in the column was, Real Mallorca are rubbish. Or at least they should be. Now, obviously, there are two important caveats there. The first one is to say, or at least they should be. In other words, I am not saying Real Mallorca are rubbish. And the second one, as you rightly point out, is that rubbish is a word I tend to overuse. Now, what's happened is that rubbish has been picked up as a word and translated into Spanish, which is obviously fair enough, and this hasn't gone down very well. There's an assumption that what I've done is essentially insult the club, insult the honour of the club. And Real Mallorca themselves have put a statement on their website expressing their surprise and indignation at this article. And it's ever so slightly surprising in so much as the tone of the article is actually quite eulogistic towards what the team has done, admittedly not towards the club. And so that appears to have caused a bit of a stir. And I'm now in a position where I've written to the club to essentially to place myself in their hands and say, let me know what you would like me to respond to, and I'm more than happy to do so.
Yeah, why not cave in, Sid? You meant rubbish in a good sense. I understand that.
He's back. Well, no.
What
like
I said
Thomas
to them is you have to translate the word rubbish as malissimo, as terrible, as right. You know, they should be. I mean, and it is true, Mallorca should be an absolutely rubbish football team.
Careful, you just make it worse.
Football team. They're currently fifth in the table, just 1 point off the Champions League places. What the work they've done is absolutely extraordinary, but as an institution in terms of the ownership and stuff, they have been pretty disastrous over the last 2 years.
Listen, Sid, if you change your mobile number, do let us know what the new one is.
And I will try and do that, yeah.
Right.
And if you change your name.
What would you like me to change it to? Oh, there's all sorts of great suggestions.
Yeah, well, that's something for the posters, perhaps, to address. In the meantime, many, many thanks, Sid, for that little window on your world. And we look forward to catching up with you, the Salman Rushdie of sports journalism, on Thursday, perhaps. Oh, dear, what an interesting life he leads. Should we hear a little bit about the Bundesliga, since we have Raphael Honigstein here with us? So many exciting things there in Germany to discuss. So the Bayern comeback continues, I notice, and lots more fun with Jens Lehmann. But just tell us a little bit about that man Louis van Gaal and the extraordinary turnaround to your German giants.
Yes, a big result in Turin, obviously, has changed the dynamics completely now. Bayern always had a fairly easy run-in towards the winter break, and now they're actually winning these games, and they're slowly but surely climbing to the top. They're only 2 points adrift now of Leverkusen, who have sort of forgotten the art of winning. And there's only one game to go. Against Hertha at home, eminently winnable as well. So Van Gaal, from being about 30 seconds from getting the sack.
Why 30 seconds?
Well, because big defeat or a lackluster performance in Turin would have been enough, right. I think. Perhaps not for the winter, but for the club to say, thank you very much, it's been interesting, but we'll go for somebody else and equally problematic in the summer. They've even now on German television put him in a pair of Dutch clogs and had him shoot at this goal wall. This is German humor in action. Orange wooden clogs, and Van Gaal did it because he was in such good mood, got such good spirits on Saturday night.
Right, he just had the best week of his career. He said the 4-1 victory over
at his Bayern career. Yes.
Oh, okay, 4-1 over Juventus, and then 5-1 away to is it Bochum?
Bochum.
Okay, and all of this without Frank Ribery, presumably.
Yeah, and without Luca Toni, of course, who has been really getting. Well, I was going to say getting the finger, but
he's not exactly a big loss, though, in his current form, Luca Toni.
Well, nobody knows because Van Gaal doesn't play him anymore. When he did come back after the injury, he actually played very well, and then he fell out with Van Gaal, and now Van Gaal has said there's absolutely no way back for him, and now he's trying to find somebody who'll pick up 10 million euros in wages, which is tricky.
It is tricky, especially for a player who, you'll permit, can't hit a Bayern door.
Yeah.
Jens Lehmann. Now, he had a fight with a ball boy a month or two ago. Yeah. He had a fight with a fan. Did he take someone's glasses away and refuse to give them back?
No, this is
Saturday. Oh, is that with this one? Right, okay. Yes. And he also got sent off.
And he had a slash.
Well, yeah, he had a slash in the... Yeah, he
behind the advertising board.
During the game during in the game, Champions League.
Against Urinea.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Unirea?
Unirea, yeah.
Anyway... He is in great form, Jens. It's his last ever season. He was supposed to retire last season, then thought, no, I'm playing so well and I'm still so sane that I will continue. And it's just been all over the place. Stuttgart were leading 1-0 away to Mainz with 5 minutes to go. They're down in relegation, their relegation zone. They needed 3 points desperately. And Jens Lehmann had the ball in his arm, ready to release it, to throw it out or whatever, so, or just do nothing for 5 minutes to just suck up a bit of time. No, but instead he decided to tread on the shoe of or the foot of Aristide Bonsay, the mind striker, who fell down as if he was tread on the
foot by a tank
or something. Yeah, it was a deliberate stamp. Spotted by the referee. The referee sent Lehmann off and gave a penalty. And the number two, Sven Ulreich, came in, conceded a goal, and because of Lehmann, they lost the lost the 2 points. And Lehmann was so confused afterwards that he tried to escape from, tried to get out of the ground as quickly as possible, ended up in an area with other fans, and a Stuttgart fan approached him and said, "Jens, why can't you be normal for once?" And Lehmann thought the best answer to that is to take the poor guy's glasses off. And he started walking away with these glasses for about 10 meters. And the guy was screaming after him, "Please give my glasses back. I need my glasses." So Jens eventually turned around, gave him the glasses back. But still, was still very confused, asked the Stuttgart assistant to get a taxi, which couldn't be organized.
Didn't he have his helicopter there?
No, no, the helicopter was stationary.
Because he got his chopper out of the game midweek, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, Christmas has come early for him because not only will he miss the last game, but also he's been made to enforce a charitable donation of €40,000 for criticizing the board before the Romania game. That was one more incident of madness we forgot to mention.
Crumba. Wow, that's extraordinary. Heart of Midlothian boy has posted in with quite an epic series of questions regarding the Bundesliga. Amongst them, will Hertha Berlin be able to climb from the bottom of the table to safety? What's going to happen to Andre Voronin? What about Hoffenheim, this time last year, top of the Bundesliga, now doing well in the table? What has happened with their free-scoring star? Can they make their way into European competition? And what price is there a German team in the Europa League final, since they truly seem to take the competition seriously? Any of those you want to throw a couple of answers at?
Well, I think Europa League is Germany's league this year. They've got, of course, now Wolfsburg in there as well. The final is in Hamburg, so, you know, I think Hamburg or Bremen to win the final.
Right. Hertha Berlin, Andre Voronin.
Hertha Berlin have got a good chance of making it out of the group stage of the Europa League, but less of a chance than, I think, surviving in the Bundesliga, because they're doing quite poorly. They've picked up a few points recently because Friedhelm Funkel there, the manager in charge, has sort of changed the whole game plan, as it were. Before that, they were, on paper at least, all about short passing. And now it's all about not passing at all and trying to get somehow a point. And they've been okay. They drew against Leverkusen on Friday night. And I don't expect them to get anything against the Bayern on Saturday. But they're improved, I would say.
Excellent.
But not improved enough.
Not enough. Oh, no. Well. Well, but before we finish, Raphael, what about this Borussia Mönchengladbach game? Extraordinary match where 5-3, the visitors scored 6 goals but still lost. Explain.
Yes, well, they scored 3 own goals, Hannover, which is no mean feat. It's never been done before in the history of the league in 47 years. And, of course, this in a week where the whole of Germany is still talking about betting scandals, it did raise a few eyebrows, but the goals were so bizarre and so freakish that if you really wanted to rig a match, and, of course, there's absolutely no suggestion that this is what happened here, I don't think you would make it this obvious. And they were sort of laughing about it afterwards, saying, "I hope the German FA will investigate," because they were so bad. I mean, these goals were so bizarre. Go to 101greatgoals.com or to YouTube and have a look at them, because they're just unbelievable. And it was the craziest game of the season.
Excellent. Raphael, many, many thanks for that. I bet there's a little musical sting in our very near future, after which we're going to be trying to follow that phenomenal roundup with a little bit of news from Serie A, and then, of course, looking forward to all the midweek excitements in the Premier League. Raphael Honigstein, we've just heard from John Ashdown and Barry Glendening champing at the bit, because we're going to have a bit of Italian news now. And
you appear to have confused champing at the bit for nodding off.
No, Barry. Have you ever been pushed by a manager?
Pushed?
Yeah, pushed and swore at.
No.
Because that's what Jose Mourinho's are doing these days in Serie A.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The guy's losing it, I tell you. No, everyone there says it's all... it's clear that he's trying to make his way out from Inter as soon as possible. And you know what, Jose, they say? We're not going to miss you. On Sunday, Inter were 1-0 up away to Atalanta. Atalanta then equalised right at the end of the game, which means that Inter have only got 1 point from two matches. And afterwards, he's Jose Mourinho, who was suspended for the game, is up in the stands writing notes and the like, and he'd gone on to the team coach because he doesn't talk to the press. And Inter Channel, their own TV station, are doing quick grabs, sound grabs, you know, interviews with the players as they come up from the dressing room to the coach, the manager, the team bus. And one local journalist from the Corriere della Sport was given permission by Inter's media officer to stand there and just write notes on what the players were saying. It was kind of an accepted custom. Mourinho, seeing this, got down off the team bus, walked over to the guy and said, "What are you doing here, you piece of shit? Get out of here, you son of a bitch. Go on, clear off. What's this man doing here?" And starts pushing him away. At which point, various Inter officials come over and pull Mourinho back, separate the two, and escort him back onto the team bus, and then later on Inter make an apology. So it does seem that the pressure is beginning to tell.
So if he is trying to manoeuvre his way out, what next for Mourinho and who next for Inter?
Well, everyone likes to talk about Mourinho at Liverpool, but that does presuppose them finding themselves a large bag of cash with him for him to make his usual series of acquisitions. Inter apparently have made an informal deal with Laurent Blanc that he's not to accept or get into advanced talks with anybody else, the tremendously successful Bordeaux manager, until they come to a bit more of a conclusion about their future in the next couple of months. And there's this story that Laurent Blanc might be... Raphael, you don't like that.
Why would he accept that deal?
Inter, a huge club with a vast amount of money to spend and some terrific players to...
Yeah, but he might not get the job, so what's in it for him?
Oh, I see. Maybe they offer him some kind of remuneration for blocking him, as they say in Italy. Mm. Well, anyway, apparently there is advanced contact between those two parties.
Was Mourinho banned from the dugout on this weekend?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
And did he sneak into the dressing room?
No, he was up in the stands.
Basket of dirty, sweaty underwear.
I understand it's a very popular theory that he wants to sort of provoke his dismissal, but despite his best efforts, Inter will still win the league. So can they? You know, can they? What will they?
Or? I think that they. It does seem that they're going to come to a mutual separation come the end of the season. And if you're saying there's not going to be grounds for dismissal, I would say that Inter's abject disaster in the next round of the Champions League will probably furnish the club with all the motive they need for that. Now, I say they only got 1 point in the last two games, but they still increased their lead this weekend because Milan managed to lose at home to Mikkeli, helping Barry with his to Palermo. But it was effectively to Mikkeli because Mikkeli was brilliant, scored one goal, set up the other with a fantastic bit of play and really should be in the national team. Of course, he won't get called up, but there you go. Man City, I believe, are in Milan talking to Gattuso about a possible move across to Eastlands, and that could happen. Much do you frown, Honigstein, because Gattuso is very, very upset. He's made noises about leaving Milan before because he's not getting the consideration, and before it was Ancelotti who managed to bring him back into the fold. But Ancelotti's gone now, and he's very much third choice for that midfield enforcer role, and he's not happy. So I can see him making a move away. Anyway, Milan lost, but also Juventus continued their miserable run by going down to Bari and losing 3-1. Diego, who had a laser, one of those little laser pens shone in his eye when he was stepping up to take a crucial penalty, missed. And that's four defeats in five. And a lot of talk about who's going to get fired. Somebody's going to get fired at Juventus. Is it going to be the team manager, Alessio Secco? Is it going to be Ciro Ferrara? There's a long list of people who might be taking over. Have a guess, John, at one of the names on the list of possible replacements.
Oh, Sven?
Sven is right. Sven is right. Gigi Casaraghi, Claudio Gentile, very likely, and not Roberto Mancini. PF10 says, Ciro Ferrara deserves no sympathy. He inherited a very strong Juve squad and was allowed to spend big in the summer. Compare him to Leonardo, who inherited an old Milan team, who just lost their best player, Kaká, and their captain, Maldini. Fair point, except for the fact that Leonardo, of course, lost, as we say. Now, we mentioned Maino Figueroa and the 2-2 Stoke-Wigan game.
So, we didn't mention Hugo Rodriguez's abysmal, the latest in a disturbing series of abysmal penalties taken by Premier League players, which he should have won all 3 points for Wigan. And Emerson Boyce's goal, which he, if he's listening, might need to be reminded of, because he apparently couldn't remember scoring because he got a kick in the head as he headed the ball over the line.
Mm. Now, coming on to the midweek games again, Birmingham are at home to Blackburn. Hey, Birmingham, is that four wins in a row? He said, knowing that it was.
I believe it is, yeah. Three of them 1-0.
Is that right?
Yeah, they ground their way to promotion last year,
mm.
and they sort of carried on where they left off to some extent. They're not a particularly exciting or thrilling team to watch, but if you're keeping clean sheets, insert cliche here.
Only Chelsea have kept more clean sheets than Alex McLeish's side, which has enabled them to rise up to eighth place in the table. How about that? Anyway, of course, West Ham was their latest victim this weekend. Again, a 1-0. And they are going to be at Bolton. Now, West Ham in all sorts of trouble. They've slipped now into the bottom three. No Carton Cole. And Dean Ashton, of course, so we should mention this, at the end of last week, announcing he's now fini.
Yeah, age 26, and it's very sad for him.
Very sad for everyone, no? Very sad for England as well, no?
Well, sad for England, sad for West Ham and their fans, but particularly sad for Ashton to be lucky enough to be that good, to be able to make a career of being a footballer and then to have sort of cut short before he'd reached his prime, because he was really, really good. And if he hadn't had so many injuries, who knows how much better he would have been. But now it's all over for him, and it's unfortunate. But these things do happen.
Also unfortunate, I would suggest, is the talk of him suing Sean Wright Phillips for the tackle which allegedly caused the injury while on duty with England, or while training with England. Even a story that West Ham might sue Chelsea, presumably on the same basis.
It does seem slightly strange, particularly as I think he made a comeback after that.
Yeah,
after suffering the injury, so
he did play on. Yeah,
presumably, surely Chelsea and Sean Wright Phillips could argue that he made one recovery and then West Ham exacerbated it or made it worse by playing him again. It does seem a bit of a non-starter.
Mm,
Your old Italian football psychic Paul Elliott?
Funny you should mention that. Yeah, well, Woodison posts in and says reminds him of Paul Elliott, who tried unsuccessfully to sue Dean Saunders. When he used to feature regularly, asked Woodison, on your Italian football programmes, did he ever discuss the incidents with you? Was he a very bitter man? Which is my first impression of him and Ashton. I have to say that one of the things that most struck me about Paul Elliott, apart from his extraordinary vocabulary, was the fact that he is one of the sunniest gentlemen of disposition that you would imagine. And in no way did his character seem marked by the fact that he had this tremendously unsuccessful legal action, or that he too had a very, very promising career. I mean, I think he was regarded as a potential England player, etc., and that it was all ended very, very prematurely. And now, from being a professional athlete and excelling at his sport, he can't actually run or turn corners. I mean, I think he can run in a straight line, he used to say when we asked, and he just wasn't very good at turning corners.
Like Derek Zoolander.
indeed. And I'm sure he would smile at that comparison, because Paul, he seemed in no way bitter and a tremendous chap.
But I don't know how these things work particularly, but presumably Ashton gets a big insurance payout, and then if he tried to sue Sean Wright Phillips and was unsuccessful, that would cost him a large portion of that insurance.
What about it, Ashton?
I don't know. I'm worried that Barry is about to launch two-footed into my knees or break my arms off so I can't write anything. You said Ashton at the start.
Oh, did I? Sorry. Sorry, I meant your vastly more successful namesake.
Of course you did. Right. Some stories that West Ham might be in the market for Brazilian championship winning Adriano, fresh from his 19 goals and 19 days of parting thereafter.
Is getting a temperamental Brazilian of rather dubious background and character really the solution to a team? Struggling team's problems.
Well, he scores goals.
Bit of a gamble.
It is a bit of a gamble.
He's now, also fond of the nightlife.
He is. So
London's trendy West End might not be the best place for
him. I think one thing about the East End or West End or whatever is that it would be significantly harder for him to spend 3 days partying in the favela after any West Ham victories. A, because they probably wouldn't get any victories, and B, because... no, I'm being unfair. But
well, you're not really...
He'd be a long way from... What? Shall I... 2 minute warning. Right, let's move on then. Producer Ben cracking that whip. Man United against Wolves, you talked about that. Sunderland are hosting Aston Villa. Burnley, Arsenal, mentioned all these. Chelsea are hosting Portsmouth. Avram Grant, 1-1 at Sunderland this weekend.
Yes, and there were Sunderland threw away more points. My laughable suggestion that they might trouble the Champions League placings come season's end has really come back to bite me on the arse.
They should be, that's the thing.
Mm. Yeah, but they're just throwing away so many. I reckon Sunderland will beat Villa. Villa's players will be a bit pleased with themselves for beating Manchester United and have a hangover from that, which Sunderland will take advantage of.
All right, okay. Now, Liverpool, Wigan, we've talked about that. What we haven't talked about, though, is Spurs, Man City. Well, rough week for Spurs, beaten at home by Wolves, no Christmas party either. And City, meanwhile,
why
arriving.
Why have they no Christmas party?
Well, Harry said there's not going to be a Christmas party. Bless you, sorry. Raphael.
Yes, yeah. That's what he said.
That's what he said. A City, meanwhile, of course, coming off that 3-3 draw, Robinho comes back into the team, and he is a figure of controversy because apparently he let the kids down on Sunday. And City
tell
were,
us more.
Well, they were off going they were going visiting a home for foster children, and Robinho was the star attraction. And he failed to turn up. Apparently, this from the News of the World, he laughed at his teammates as he drove out, cackling from the training ground.
Was he cackling manically?
Oh, I suspect so.
And
in
rubbing
his,
hands together.
Well, he would have been, but he had the gloves on, probably. Oh. Yeah. And then, when the kids were in tears and that, the club had to send a chauffeur to pick him up and bring him, and he arrived two hours late.
But it was too late. The kids were all cried out.
I should think they were.
Ebenezer Robinho.
That's another Christmas ruin, isn't it? City at Spurs, two very bipolar teams, of course. How do you see this one going?
Well, to echo my laser-sharp analysis earlier, winning would be a good thing. Drawing would be less good.
Losing would
be the worst result of the three for either team.
Well, that's just your opinion. Raphael. Yeah.
The problem is that both teams can't be trusted to perform anywhere near their true potential. So,
but it is a derby of the top four contenders. Will it give us a proper indication of the real indication will be another
draw, and then we'll be as clueless as before because, as I said, they just can't seem to get any sort of rhythm or consistency going, especially not City, who really look at their results and all these hundreds of draws. They should have won most of them, I would suggest.
This could finish 0-0, it could finish 7-0, one team could win 5-0, you know, either, it's
one
impossible
team,
to call.
One team could win, the other could lose. Who knows?
I'm getting strange gestures from producer Ben.
He's whipping a lasso around, I think.
And, you know what, I think that brings us to the end then of this week's pod, with so many questions and so much to look forward to. From this midweek round, I'm sure you'll be joining
us. So much to look forward to, except Thursday's pod.
No. When we review all of these games and much, much more. So many thanks in the meantime for joining us, Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you,
Peter, John Ashdown.
Cheers,
and Barry Glendening.
Sloan.
Producer Ben, and you, listeners worldwide. Speak to you on Thursday. Goodbye.
Why are you saying bitter?
Because you said thanks. So
and
I'm
then you would
bitter.
Answer, please. Please would be your answer to that.
Don't you say that as like, you're welcome.
You've got a point, but it...
I have got a point!
It sounded...
Thank you!
It was odd.
There you go. Happy Hanukkah.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.